Allegro WIPR 91.3 FM presents Reflections, hosted by Jorge Gonzalez, a fresh new way to look at events with our well-being in mind.
Welcome to Reflections, your host Jorge Gonzalez. Wish you a good day. I had a good day if it's Thursday, and wish you a good day if it's the repeat program on Friday. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your comments and feedback. Let me give you the telephone number that you can text and call me on. It's 939-333-1010. 939-333-1010. It came out yesterday. You know, I love this El Nuevo Día, the different sayings they have, para comenzar tu día, to begin your day. And this one was Wednesday, the 9th, the other day. And it, in Spanish, is El hombre aprende a vivir cuando ya no le queda mucho tiempo. Man learns how to live when he has little time left. And that's by Alda Merini, an Italian writer and poet, who I do not know. But just reflecting on it, at least in my life, and I look back, I think I've as I've mentioned a number of times, I look back and I think I've always lived, you know, well for the particular age in my life. The saying I have now when people say, how are you? And I say, well, no, bien para mi edad, you know, good for my age. And I think that sort of goes back all the way. I think when I go back, I think for the things that I emphasize and got involved with was, you know, within the framework of the particular period of my life. And always, you know, there are difficult moments and great moments. Each year, each decade has its challenges and it has its opportunities. And I think, you know, I faced those challenges and I took advantage of the opportunities and, you know, really no regret in the overall, you know, scheme of things on it. But I think this statement that as you grow older, you have less time, or if there's a moment that, you know, you're told that you only have X amount of months or days to live, I think you do put things in perspective, and I do think that you emphasize some of the human relationships and the family relationships, and reduce the emphasis on the material and those more, well, I would say, you know, superficial things that give you happiness or joy at a moment. And bear down on things that are more profound and have more lasting importance for you, and you know, always learning as I've been saying, as and reading and experiencing new things and you know, towards that. But that is, I think, an overall, you know, good statement that as your years go by and or in your face. Your possible death that comes with less time. You do emphasize and learn and you know, more important things than you probably did in the past. So, yeah, good statement. Okay, I want to talk today about the third segment. And it's going to be in this third segment, but it's also the third segment of the three parts series that I've had discussing my father's life and how he has influenced me. And as if you followed the last few programs, basically it's a biography that I put together, 12 chapters during the COVID shutdown, lockdown, and you know, I hope to publish. But those there's one aspect that I want to go into, and I'll do it in the third segment of the program, and it's going to be on the legacy that he left with respect to the business world, his position, it ties in with the personal values and that he had and that he has passed on to us, and that influenced me tremendously. And so we'll go into that, and there's some really touching aspects of the legacy that he left with some very powerful words by some people that I think you'll find very uplifting, and I hope with that discussion continue to dialogue on these aspects of the personal values that we have, each one of us individually, that are for our well-being. So that'll be in the third segment. I thought that would be interesting. I kind of put together some of the articles that I wrote. The situation in Iran. I rarely, used to get into politics, certainly not Puerto Rico politics, but every once in a while, with respect to international and world politics, I have gotten into. And, with respect to Ukraine, from the very beginning, I've been commenting on it. And just as a preface on respect to Ukraine, it continues to be the situation where the U.S. Just doesn't seem to give what's necessary to support Ukraine. It's always just a little bit below that threshold to put them over the top. And I continue to be shocked by the fact that we haven't really imposed the sanctions that are available. I mean, the now, consider X sanctions that are still under consideration. I don't understand. The sanctions should have been all placed a long, long time, at the very beginning, as fully as possible. And it's just part of this dribbling of support that has created so much death in Ukraine. But let's put aside Ukraine. Let's talk about Iran and why I want to make some comments on it. First of all, you may remember there was one of these El Nuevo Día para comenzar tu día statements, and it said nada desarrolla tanto la inteligencia como viajar. Nothing develops our intelligence as much as travel, and I discussed, what kind of travel, and I traveled to Iran. That was in 2013, in April of 2013, is a good example of the kind of travel that I think develops your empathy, your experiences, different culture, language, geography, way of thinking, just really. Really, a new experience, and what kind of brings it on? Let me, before I get into that experience, let's talk about Iran and where it stands right now. And there's a great article in Foreign Affairs, and the title of the article is "The Islamic Republic's New Lease on Life: How the U.S. Israeli Strikes Empowered the Iranian Regime." And it's by a professor, Mohammed Ayatollahi, it's Ayatollah with an H-I, Tabar, T-A-B-A-A-R, and it's dated July 8th, 2025. He's involved with the Harvard Kennedy School. He's an associate professor of international affairs at Texas A&M, University's Bush School of Government and Public Service. And a fellow, I'm not quite sure what that means. He's both a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy and a fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. He's the author of Religious Statecraft, The Politics of Islam in Iran, and author of multiple articles for Foreign Affairs on Iran. Let me read the first paragraph I think it's really important because it's the gist of this position. He says, Israelis' June 13 assault on Iran, designed to decapitate Tehran's military and nuclear program is one of the worst setbacks the Islamic Republic has ever experienced. In less than 2 weeks, the Israel Defense Forces managed to assassinate dozens of senior Iranian commanders and nuclear scientists. The IDF destroyed many of Iran's air defense systems and damaged its nuclear facilities. Israel bombed Iran's energy infrastructure, military bases, and various missile production sites. The strikes were precise, indicating the Israeli intelligence had penetrated the highest levels of Iran's armed forces and government. And towards the end of the attacks, the United States joined in. As a result, the Iranians' military is a weaker now than it was just a month earlier. Then he goes on that that this basically the was a surprise, and to a certain extent to Iran, they had been discussing a treaty that they were hoping it was indications that the U.S. would be accept an enrichment uranium of up to 3.67%. Which was the level that had been available in the joint agreement in which Russia had been involved. He says that the Iranian society is unlikely to become more rigidly Islamic in response to the strikes. To maintain internal stability, the government might even tolerate more social freedom, but the regime will probably become more repressive, arresting anyone it sees as a traitor. And critically, Iranians may be more willing to accept the state as it is. The country could now have a new social contract, one that prioritizes national security above everything else. And basically saying that this attack, which has been a shock, created a rally around the flag effect as Iranians condemned them and celebrated, the Iranian government's response. And even critics of the Iranian regime, have come back and supported the Iranian government, which it's not too good. And later on, he mentions opponents they were more moderate, and in fact, that they were during the time that we visited Iran, they have also come forward and supported the Iranian state, which is kind of a shock. We're talking about the former presidents Mohammad Khatami and Hassan Rouhani. They were, especially Rouhani, I remember, he came in just, after we were in Iran, and he really, was approaching the U.S., and things were looked like they were going to be quite different going forward. And of course, as we all know, in 2018, Trump in his first term got out of the agreement that they had reached with respect to being able to surveillance of the nuclear facilities in Iran, and then imposed new sanctions and all, and the whole relationship completely deteriorated from there on. So basically, what he's what his position is that the of the author is that this has strengthened the Iranian government that was and not in such a great the problem. He says even political prisoners have come and supported the regime. So if that's true, and of course the other thing he's saying is with the Trump leaving the agreement back in 2018, and then although there were negotiations and maybe there was going to be allowance of some uranium enrichment for a certain percentage along the lines of the past agreement, then the strikes took place, and the U.S. joined the strikes. So the hell heck of a lot of credibility has been lost, and you know, and all of this goes back to you know, the time where we reinstated the Shah, and we had the Iranian Revolution and everything that has taken place back from the 70s. So that's the gist of the article, you know, by I agree with it. I mean, you know, I think that's right now it says Tehran is in a more skeptical diplomacy than ever, and it's going to be tough to reach a diplomatic solution that's going to work, you know, and it's going to be a trust, you know, with the situation as it is and what's happened in the background. So that's where I thinking, you know, along the lines of this article is where we are in Iran. Okay, let's talk about Iran. In 2013, you know, why did I wrote three articles, and one of them is why, you know, why visit Iran? And the main focus was a travel offer by the Harvard Museum of Natural History, and it was, you know, for this April 2013 itinerary, and it was along the time, basically the time that I would be celebrating my 69th birthday, and I mentioned to Pinky that this seemed like a very interesting trip, nothing we had ever considered. It wasn't in any of our bucket list or anything that we ever discussed. But it was a country like Vietnam that created a lot of questions as to, you know, what was it really like, and how had they been able to survive certain things, and what were they really like, you know, and what was the situation? And of course, these two, both Vietnam and Iran, were places that I would not have been comfortable traveling to by myself or with a group that I wasn't, you know, comfortable with. This the Harvard Museum of Natural History, their trips are very cultural or historic, and they give you literature and books to read, and the people that go, both the guides and the people along, you learn more from them than sometimes the guides, you know, really quite sophisticated. So off we went to Iran in 2013. And of course I've run out of time quicker than I thought the first segment. So when we come back, I'll discuss these three articles. First, I'll continue on a why Iran. And then the women in Iran, their situation, and just some fun I had with the cats. But there's a statement they have called you know, say Taruf, which we'll discuss. It's very, very Iranian, probably Persian. So we'll talk about it. We'll go right back after the pause. This is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections.